Welcome to Notepad. This is Ibrahim Sani speaking to you from the studio in Bukit Jalil. We shall continue our conversation with Dr. Varinderjit Singh, the non-executive chairman of Tricor, as well as the president of MIGPA, the Malaysian Institute of Certified Public Accountants. Dr. Varinder, thanks again for speaking to us. We love to have you on. There's a lot of things that we want to talk about for now. And for today, we want to talk a little bit more about tax reform. Very recently, Janet Yellen was talking about the U.S. Treasury Secretary. Yeah. Of course, we all know her from her days as the Fed boss. Was talking about corporate taxes need to be relooked, not just in the U.S., but globally. In Malaysia, we've always had this perennial problem of not collecting enough. LHDN, coming on the show, was talking about the same thing. The deputy CEO was in the chair next to me, was talking about the same thing in terms of collection being a problem. We all know the story of the GST, first introduced, then repealed, and perhaps reintroduced in the near term. So there's a lot of things that we can talk about when it comes to taxation. But before we jump into all that, I want to start a little bit more on the concept of what's the problem with the current tax system in Malaysia. Where do you think, Dr. Varinder, lies the tax problems of the country?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Ibrahim. Very quickly, the core problem is our tax base is very narrow. So when we talk about tax base, we're looking at the number of taxpayers and we are looking at the coverage of in terms of taxes on the relevant types of earnings that you are supposed to tax on. So that has perennially been the issue, a narrow base. And I think you know this very well as well. Statistics will tell you that less than 15% of the working population actually pay income taxes. Only about less than 20% of the companies registered on the Securities Commission's database actually are subject to taxes. Many, of course, of the companies are loss-making and many are dormant, so I can understand that. And so this issue of a narrow base has always been there. And when we tried to widen the base by way of implementing GST, I think we pushed it a little bit too far because the GST was covering a very wide segment, which is the right strategy, but you have to do it progressively as the people get acceptance, people give acceptance to this and slowly move on. So the issue of widening the base can be solved in many ways. And perhaps the other element of this is the tax administrative structure. Are our tax administrators functioning efficiently at a high level? Perhaps more could be done. That's the other side of it. And that indirectly could also lead to a widening of the base of taxpayers. And so the issue about all this, how do you widen the base? Part of it is number one, changing our tax structure. And I think this is, again, many people say it's sensitive. Our personal tax structure, income tax structure actually gives a lot of reliefs. And we have a higher exemption threshold. So many of those earning 4,000 ringgit a month in terms of a household will not be paying taxes because of reliefs that they get, you know, the children relief and various other reliefs that you have. So the question that arises is, should that be lowered and therefore more people are in the net? They may pay a small amount, but when you add the volume, you may collect something substantial. So these are things to toy about.
I just want to understand a little bit in terms of the taxation policy per se, because the way I look at it is, yes, tax administrators, we have to look at the efficiency of it. We have to look at the clearer roles and designation of each and every single tax administrator and what they do. But it all boils down to the policy itself. Yes. Are we for progressive tax? Are we for windfall tax, for instance? And all this comes straight from the executive. And every single time that we talk about, say, for instance, GST, this whole fun fact kept being thrown at my face, which is normally governments who introduces the GST don't normally survive the ballot box. I'm talking about globally. And in Malaysia in 2018, That surely was also the case. Now, of course, we can also argue that 2018, well, there's a myriad of factors, including 1MDB and all the other stuff. But it still boils down to GST being an unpopular subject for governments to introduce. But at the same time, we have academics, we have tax administrators, we have laymen, commoners, people like you and me, also argue that GST is, number one, a more fairer tax form of doing things. And number two, it does net a lot of money for the government. So net effect, it's actually quite good. If something is good for you, why is it bad for the government to do?
Well, it's but you talked about tax policy in the first place. I think this concept of what's our direction forward in terms of tax policy is actually a very logical question to ask. And I would say that even though I've been in the tax field for years, as a practitioner, as an academic, and so on, I will say that the tax policy framework is very unclear for the nation. We don't have a blueprint. We don't have transparency. We seem to go on an ad hoc basis. So that's policy aside. So this is an issue we need to fix. We cannot sort of test the market, and the moment there is some kind of pushback, we don't introduce a particular, let's say, a particular change in the tax. We become very sensitive to people's reactions. And nowadays in social media, reactions can be very, very immediate and fast, but it could also represent a small segment of society who are imposing themselves. So number one, that's what we need, a 5-10 year framework. And I was hoping that the 12 Malaysia plan would be announced, and hopefully there is an element there, a chapter which talks about our tax policy. Unfortunately, not been announced. So that's one. Second thing you talked about in terms of the GST per se, we all agree it's a good tax. We never said it was a bad tax. The issue is you need to handle it well in terms of communication, in terms of the PR aspects. And I think that's where the failings were, in terms of the PR aspects and so on, despite the fact that some personal tax rates were decreased because of the introduction of GST. Despite that, you found people being very sensitive. And I tell you why. The significant majority of our population do not pay any taxes, all right? And so when they hear that a GST is going to be imposed, call it anything you like, SST, GST, concept is in a way similar with some modifications. The moment you hear there's a GST on the products I'm going to buy, on something, service I'm going to get, and I never used to have it, there is an immediate reaction. And so the issue here is, why isn't paying taxes a culture in our country? And this is not only of Malaysia, many other developing countries have that pushback. So I think sometimes a bold government needs to push it through.
I want to focus on that point itself, because that is the whole crux of our conversation this evening, which is, why isn't paying tax a culture? I bring to you two ideas brought forth, one by the World Bank President of Malaysia. He was arguing that Malaysia is on the precipice of becoming a high growth nation if and only if we change how we do things substantially, including that one of which, there's a lot of things that we have to do substantially in terms of change. Yes. Number one is changing our income structure. That's the that's the point that the World Bank President was talking about in Malaysia. The second idea is brought forth by Nur Hisham, the Chief Strategy Officer of EPF, also arguing that wage is a big problem. Yes. Wage in Malaysia, when you look at EPF receipts, you know, a bulk of it is actually those earning about 2,000 ringgit or 3,000 ringgit, despite where they are in urban, rural and all that. If you're contributing, if you're an EPF member and you're contributing to the EPF, a large chunk of it, I don't remember the percentage, but I remember it being substantial, is just 2,000, 3,000 ringgit. Yes. So that perhaps one of the reasons why paying tax is not a culture, because the income is the problem. What do you think of these two ideas?
What the World Bank said is what many others have said before. Our average wages in the country are low. And that is a very strange situation when we are trying to aim for a high income nation status. That is totally a disconnect. And I would say that artificially, we have been imposing some kind of barriers which have led to wages being kept artificially low over time. And this is really a function of businesses wanting to show more profits and wanting to therefore not share their profits adequately with workers. This is a dilemma that we have, and this is can only be resolved if the government pushes things through in terms of a policy. In terms, look, minimum wage has been introduced, and we all know that a minimum wage in KL is still extremely low, given all the studies that have been done, and given Bank Negara's study as well. So we need to push that up slowly. But connected with this is the reliance on foreign labor. And you also want to make sure that foreign labor costs are kept low. So that's the dilemma we have. So it can only be fixed by the policymakers. And the policymakers need to be bold about it. But unfortunately, you and I and many others can probably see it. Policymakers are dispersed, different ministries, silos, not working cohesively. Although they may pay lip service to this issue, but no real solutions are being pushed. So academics will give you solutions, commentators will talk about it, and you and I will talk about it. But why isn't the ministry and the government at hand developing a cohesive solution? Now, sometimes we hear that it is work in progress, but we keep hearing that. So these are things that perhaps areas like 12 Malaysia Plan and all that, and ultimately the policy that we are trying to develop would look at, because the wage levels are low, which is why our personal income tax, number of people paying personal income tax is low. And also I go back to the World Bank report recently, which they launched not too long ago. And one of the requirements that they said was we need to improve our personal income tax structure. And that's going to be a bit of a nightmare as well, because you are then revolving around the same group of people that are paying taxes. And how do you do that? And how do you make it more progressive? And are they implying that we need to increase the tax rates, which we did for the high income levels? And 30% now is the highest tax bracket and so on. So how far can we go? And then you have the issue about high net worth individuals. The moment tax rates go up, money flows out of the country and you go for countries which have a better return to you. So this is the dilemma we have, and it needs to be fixed over a period of time. It cannot be fixed overnight. So we need a 5 to 10 year plan. And this is what I'm waiting for.
Definitely, we need a consistent approach. As you say, the 5 to 10 year plan has to stick to it. You can't just change because the government changes.
Right.
It just doesn't work. But very recently, we had, we call it the three-cornered dialogue here in Estrawani. We had Sharil Amdan, the information chief of UMNO. We had Nurul Izzah, the vice president of PKR. It's strange because they come from different places in terms of politics, but they tend to agree on one thing. One is on the ratio of salary between the CEOs versus the employees. CEO, the bottom is raised by 3% year on year, but the CEOs themselves increase by, 3-digit percent. When you look at the ratio of how much the lowest paid employee earns versus the richest guy being paid, normally it's a guy, normally it's the CEO, and we're looking at that ratio increasing by the numbers. I wish I had the ratios per se, but the numbers do increase from 10 years ago to today. And what's even stranger was that these individuals, Sharil Amdan and Ruiza, was talking about productivity is increasing despite the pandemic, but wages remain constant. So there seems to be a class divide by those people earning at the bottom versus the policymakers versus the C-suite and the rest. So this is more of a private sector argument, not so much public. You were talking about public just now.
Yes.
Is there a push that the private sector must take it upon themselves in order for them to improve the wage gap and also the ratio of how much the highest paid is being paid versus the lowest paid?
Yes, I agree. So therefore, it's a question of moral suasion and long-term stamina, and the policymakers should be pushing this argument consistently and not allowing corporates to push back and then silence and then you forget about it. So I think you need that. And we don't have a consistent voice from the government agencies pushing this agenda, at least over a long-term period, and then you fix the long-term period. So I certainly do agree that we have had studies made by Central Bank, Bank Negara, which actually does say, in at least the Klang Valley, the average wage levels and the for survival and so on should be X amount. And many of them are not at that level. So that's number one, fundamentally, what you need to survive. And so businesses will tell you one very simple thing. Oh, if I do that, I will not make any profits. Now, if you don't make profits, you don't pay income taxes, corporate taxes as well. So there's a chain reaction that they argue. But someone needs to do that particular study. So what if the profits go down a bit? But listed companies will also have this issue about their shareholders and dividends are expected and so on. But really, I think at the end of the day, we also have a corporate governance framework. When you look at ESG and so on, it's also nowadays about taking care of your workers, taking care of your staff, and therefore the productivity improves if you provide a good environment. And that includes paying a reasonable wage. Of course, the question is, what's a reasonable wage? So large corporations, I think, are taking the ESG argument on board. I think if you look at the top 50 companies or 100 companies listed on a stock exchange, probably that aspect of ESG is moving in a certain direction. But is it sufficient? I think we need to analyze that. What about the rest of the companies in the stock market? How are they pushing this? Now, ESG, for example, is not a mandatory requirement at this stage. You just are encouraging listed companies to adopt it. I think it has to move in a certain direction. Let's see how it goes. And after that, it would be, I think, the way we think. Investors will look at companies with invest in ESG. I give you a good example now lately has been all the workers, the foreign workers, workers' quarters, accommodation. I mean, goodness me, we've had legislation on workers' quarters, but why wasn't this enforced? Why is it enforced only now during the pandemic when we find that a lot of the foreign workers have the ones testing positive, at least in some of the test areas, and suddenly the housing issue becomes an issue. Suddenly the ministry discovers the housing accommodation is not adequate. And suddenly you are looking at compounding people. What are ministries doing? What are agencies doing? What have they been doing all this while? If you had been strong in your enforcement, and guidance, by the way, enforcement is not about compound, fining, or taking people to court. For example, when you look at environmental damage, you just take people to court, they get charged, you pay a fine or something, and then they go back to damaging the environment. So, no, we need long-term solutions. I think each ministry has got the capabilities to do this. But unfortunately, they are waiting for signs from the ministers, which is the wrong way to run government. Civil servants must be bold enough to push measures across and educate your ministers, because the ministers are not going to be there all the while. So this all is right. Where I think our civil service, I look at civil service as being an agency or body of persons which can do so much more. But we have a subservient kind of attitude. We have a feudalistic structure. We need to change that. So ministers are not there to direct you to do things. Ministers are there to perhaps listen to you and understand things and agree to push a certain pathway. But the civil servants are the technocrats. They are the ones who are supposed to get the knowledge together and understand what's happening on the ground. Has that really been working well? I think they need to empower them.
Dr. Birinder, let's talk about blue skies. It's fun talking about all our problems and our woes, but we have to move ahead and try to forge into some ideas where, if it can be done, what should be done? This include the two big items, which is to broaden our tax base, not just allow for 15% of workers or 7% of Malaysians to just pay income tax. Somehow or other, that doesn't look and sound right. Number two is, of course, what kind of taxes would be a good thing to be introduced?
I see it as four areas, four pillars that perhaps need to be focused on. Number one, the underground economy, the under-reporting or the under-declaring, whether it's of income or whether it's of dutiable items. Number one, that's one pillar. The second pillar is about reducing tax leakages. And this could be leakages through incentives which have been erroneous, which have been given to people who, entities who perhaps don't really need it, or which leakages can also be too many exemptions that may already be in our laws. Perhaps you need to slowly remove them or curtail them. Third pillar is about enhancing tax administration. This is about technology, data analytics, touch points. And fourth pillar is perhaps what you just talked about, new sources of revenue. So I put it into these four buckets, right? The first bucket, underground economy, under-reporting, evasion, is an area that Inno Revenue is saying they are pushing in a big way during this particular year or so. You talk about technology, and this is about using more tax administrative tools. And I think the Malaysian authorities are learning from the OECD, from the developed world, and trying to implement that. And electronic invoices is one solution. But somehow we're not even pushing this, that everyone issues electronic invoices. The issue there is the SME sector. And we are saying they are not embracing digitalization. So that's another area to fix, pushing that aspect of digitalization. Reducing tax leakages is the area of tax incentives. And I think with many programs I've been on, and you yourself may have hosted, talks about, are we giving the right incentives? Number one, look, we need to attract FDI. We need to give incentives. I certainly agree. But perhaps we do not need to give everything that we've been giving. So tax administration is about touch points, right? You get information from immigration, information from the police, information from the local government. Why is that information not flowing? The issue here is that we are getting bits and pieces, but we don't see a concerted long-term plan or blueprint. And the Tax Reform Committee I was on did give a number of suggestions, and I hope that can be taken up. But unfortunately, when governments change, it's the civil service waits for instructions, and that's the wrong way to go. My other point on new sources of revenue.
Yeah. Sorry, not very much time. Sure. Maybe one more minute.
Yeah. So GST is a good tax from the point of view of controls, inbuilt controls. It is therefore well known that it's good. But we can still do something with our SST. Widen it slowly, remove some exemptions over time. And then ultimately, 3 to 4 years, it becomes a value-added tax. So I think it's still the way to go. But I must caution that GST is not the solution to generating tremendous revenue. It is about the coverage. The more goods and services you cover, the more tax you collect. So SST can do the same thing by widening the scope. So that's on GST. I do think it's the future, but at the same time, we need all the other building blocks in place. So it's a whole communication plan, a whole policy framework. Yeah.
Last question, Dr. Virinder, before we end this interview. Some people, including myself, thought that Budget 2021 that was presented by Zafrul, Tengku Zafrul last year, might have introduced the GST. Do you think GST is going to be reintroduced in this year's budget?
No, I think Tengku Zafrul has come out very clearly that no new taxes, because look, the pandemic recovery stage, so I don't think so. So the issue is the shadow economy, data analytics, more sharing of information so you can get more taxpayers is one way. And then perhaps after next year onwards, perhaps 22, 23, we could look at some changes and tweaking. But we need a plan. And I, at the moment, is sitting here and you talking to you, and I'm not even aware of a plan.
So let's ask everybody to watch Notepad with you and me so that they can take some pointers.
Thank you.
But for now, that was our conversation with Dr. Varinderjit Singh, the president of MIGPI, as well as the non-executive chairman of Tricor. If you've missed any part of this show, just head on to astroawani.com. Look for Notepad over there. And we've had again and again the conversations of Dr. Varinderjit Singh talking about some of the blue sky strategies of corporate Malaysia, including that of good corporate governance, ESG, and now tax. So be sure to look up for those kind of episodes that we've had before. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.